Connection and is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Many people in this country first heard of the Kurds 12 years ago. Although Kurds have lived for centuries on land that links Syria, Turkey, Iran, and Iraq, they have never had a nation of their own. Think back now to this week, 12 years ago. The first president, George Bush, had called a halt to the first Gulf War, and he gave his now infamous wink to people like the Kurds to finish off Saddam Hussein.
And there's another way for the bloodshed to stop, and that is for the Iraqi military and the Iraqi people to take matters into their own hands and force Saddam Hussein, the dictator, to step aside and then comply with the United Nations resolutions and rejoin the family of peace-loving nations.
Well, the Kurds did rise up, and they discovered to their horror that Saddam Hussein was far from a beaten man. The Iraqi dictator's counterattack drove millions from their homes. Hundreds of thousands of them fled north across the snow-swept mountain border into Turkey. Many died en route. I was among those journalists watching as they died by the thousands in those makeshift refugee camps.
Each morning at the Jukurja camp, the first sign of life is a scene of death. Parents pick their way down the mud and rock trail from the mountaintop, carrying dead babies to the mosque in the village. The little brothers and sisters stumble behind, hungry and barefoot. This morning, Ibrahim Yosef Yonan watched the morning procession.
We are all everybody here. There was nothing. These people, thousand people here, they die. Children all die. Women all die. People, they cannot do something. No food, no tent, no anything, no water. Water, all water, this water, this for not for drink. This water all dirty. People, what they do? You ask this country for do something for us.
Over the past decade, the Kurds have returned to their homes in northern Iraq. They have reestablished cities and villages under protection of the U.S. and British no-fly zone. Many Kurds now refer to their home as the long-awaited Kurdistan, dreaming that once Saddam Hussein is toppled, they will finally have a land of their own. Well, would that it would be so easy. You see, over the past two decades, the Turkish government has been involved in a bloody crackdown against Kurds in that country. The Turks are now telling the Americans that after Saddam is defeated, they will not tolerate a Kurdish homeland, a Kurdistan. Not in Turkey, not in Iraq. And they're threatening to start their own war to make sure it doesn't happen. Connection listeners, can the U.S. administration navigate the threat of this post-Saddam crisis? Is there any way to meet the interests of the two feuding allies, the Turks and the Kurds? And what's the U.S. obligation to the 4 million Kurds now living in northern Iraq? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we will talk in a moment with two seasoned diplomats, one a Turk and one a Kurd. First, though, to Peter Galbraith, a former U.S. ambassador. He spent years studying this issue. He joins us from the National War College in Washington, where he's a professor of national security issues. He's got a few minutes. He just stepped out of class. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Tell me whether or not, in your view, the U.S. is genuinely caught now between its need for help from the Kurds and its need for help from the Turks.
Indeed, the United States is caught between its need to accommodate Turkey, which is the access point to northern Iraq, and where the United States wants to put troops to open up a northern front, and the Kurds, who have been key allies in Iraq for 12 years, and who President Bush has made as the, if you will, the poster children of why the U.S. ought to intervene. He constantly talks about Saddam as the man who gassed his own people. But unfortunately for the Kurds, the United States actually has decided this issue. Last week in Ankara, the President Bush's special envoy, Zalmay Khalilzad, summoned the Kurdish leaders to that city. And told them that they had first to give in to Turkish demands to allow Turkish troops into northern Iraq. And second, and I think this was very disturbing to the Kurdish leaders, that they had to give up their hope for a federal Iraq in which they would have their own self-governing entity. To be precise, he said that federalism would be something that would be decided later by an Iraqi parliament. The Kurds, of course, have their own government now. They don't want to give it up, and they know that in a future Iraq, they will be just a relatively small minority, and so they have no guarantees about the future. This they will refuse to accept, and I think it sets up a potentially serious clash.
Now, you have spent a lot of time in northern Iraq talking to the Kurds. You make the point that they will not accept this. Does that mean, Peter, that we focus our attention on the conflict between Turkey and the Kurds in the weeks leading up to the war, right now? Or is this something that we should be watching for after a war takes place?
It's likely to be a much greater problem after the war takes place. If Turkish troops come into northern Iraq, there is going to be a real risk of clashes between those Turkish troops and the Kurdish militia, who number between 60 and 130,000. And the United States might find itself having to be a peacekeeper as between two key allies. The second problem the United States has is that it really has no way to force the Kurds to give up their government. It may ask them to do so, but the Kurds understand that they have some strong hand cards for the first time in their history. So they don't intend actually to give up their government, and it's inconceivable that the United States then will come in and arrest the Kurdish leaders or forcibly close down the Kurdish parliament, which is incidentally the only elected parliament in the history of Iraq.
Peter, we'll be talking later in the program after you've left about some of the flashpoints in that area, the fight for the control of the city of Kirkuk and other things. But when we step back and look at all the issues that are unresolved between Kurds and Turks and the land that we're focusing on in northern Iraq, is there any possibility, any way of imagining how that area could exist in peace with the war plans that we see right now ahead of us?
Actually, it is not difficult to imagine this. The Kurdish leaders have been forthcoming in telling the United States and indeed Turkey that they don't intend to cross the two red lines that Turkey has laid out for intervention. They said they will not declare an independent country, and they have said they will not move militarily to take over the multi-ethnic city of Kirkuk, where there are a lot of ethnic Turkmens or ethnic Turks live. But Turkey now sees an opportunity to go beyond this. They see an opportunity to get rid of the Kurdish experiment in self-government, which they fear, I must say not without reason, could ultimately at some point in the future lead to an independent Kurdistan.
Peter, I know you have to go. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Well, thank you.
All right. Joining us on the program now, we have with us Dr. Najmuddin Karim. He's president of the Washington Kurdish Institute. He's a member of the steering committee for the Iraqi opposition. And Bulent Alireza is with us. He's director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. That's work focused on U.S.-Turkey relations. Earlier in his career, he served Turkey as a diplomat in Washington and at the United Nations. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Alireza, I wonder if I can begin with you. Why is it so important for Turkey to make sure that certain rules are in place concerning the Kurds in the run-up to the war? What's really at stake here?
If I may, just a small correction. I wasn't a Turkish diplomat. I was a Turkish Cypriot diplomat.
Okay, thank you for that.
It's a major distinction.
It's a significant one, yes.
Yeah. Your conversation with Peter Galbraith, I think, really touched on the heart of the matter. The two red lines that Turkey has drawn up relates to their desire to avoid an independent Kurdish state emerging out of a post-Saddam breakup of Iraq. And also, as Peter underlined, their desire to avoid the Kurds entering with military force into Kirkuk, not least because of the presence of their ethnic brethren, the Turkmens, in there. Now, this issue has been up in the air for some time, because after those horrible weeks and months that the Kurds spent after Bush, the first, as it were.
In the spring of 91, yes.
Yeah, asked them to rise up and then allowed, essentially, Saddam to crush them. They've been living in relative security, not least because Turkey's been allowing U.S. and British planes to operate the no-fly zone out of Incirlik. So we had a strange situation in which the Turks may have been somewhat uncomfortable with the presence of a Kurdish entity in northern Iraq, but they were willing to let it go and, in fact, allow it to exist because of their relationship with the U.S. Now, with the possibility of the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, the questions which were left up in the air are now coming back to the fore, and Turkey is essentially saying, if you need my help, then there are certain things that I will not allow.
Najmuddin Karim, this sounds very familiar, I suppose, to you, that the Kurdish people make certain alliances with certain expectations and then find at the last moment that whatever those expectations were may actually not be borne out.
Well, it sounds like deja vu again, doesn't it? Actually, the points that you raised and Peter and Mr. Alireza talked about are very crucial. The fears of Turkey as far as an independent Kurdish state is unfounded. They have been reassured by the Kurdish leadership, and the Kurdish leadership has affirmed that they don't have desire for independence. However, they will continue to ask for a federal Kurdistan within a united Iraq. Like it was mentioned earlier, the Kurds have been running their affairs for the past 11 years. It's the only democratic place in the Middle East outside of Israel that everybody practices their beliefs, their religion. And for that matter, the Turkomans, who Turkey is so much is concerned about, have never had as much rights as they have in the Kurdistan regional government. In regard to the city of Kirkuk, the city of Kirkuk is historically a Kurdistan city. There are maps actually from the Ottoman days that has Kurdistan in it, and Kirkuk is in the middle of that area.
And the Turks have maps which say that it is originally a Turkish city. I don't mean to correct you. I'm not. It seems to me like a Jerusalem, that everybody has some claim to that city. Is that fair?
It is fair in a sense, but it has always been a majority Kurdish city. It has been part of Kurdistan always, and these maps are not Kurdish maps. These are maps from the Ottoman Empire where it says Kurdistan and Kirkuk is in it. And as far as military takeover, the issue is not military takeover. The issue is hundreds of thousands of people from Kirkuk who have been ethnically cleansed, and Arab settlers have brought into the city. And the people who will be returning to Kirkuk are not only Kurds, but also Turkomans who have been forcibly deported and forced out, and their possessions have been taken away. I am from Kirkuk myself. Kirkuk has always been a city where Kurds and Turkomans lived in harmony. And this, for Turkey to make this issue, I believe it's not genuine. And Turkey,
I'm going to stop you there, if you don't mind. We'll pick that point up when we come back after the break. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we're talking about the disagreements that exist now and may become worse between Turks and Kurds in the land that we refer to now as northern Iraq, both before and after the likelihood of a war in Iraq. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for National Public.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. The United States is finding itself caught in the thorny dilemma, in part of its own making, between trying to please two allied groups in northern Iraq, or with reference to northern Iraq, the Kurds who are occupying the land now and the Turks who are being invited to be drawn into a war against Saddam Hussein. With me on the program today, Dr. Najmuddin Karim. He's president of the Washington Kurdish Institute. Bulent Alireza is the director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. And Mr. Alireza, let me begin with you. Is there a simple way of explaining why it is that Turkey is so determined that there not be an independent Kurdistan?
Well, the Kurdish question has been part of the Middle East equation for a very long time. There was a reference to the Ottoman period, and as the Ottoman Empire broke up, the Kurds who found themselves on the line that was drawn not in 1923, when the original peace treaty between Kemal Atatürk and the victorious allies of the First World War was drawn up, but in 1926, when there was a separate agreement between Turkey and the United Kingdom relating to the line that eventually ended up where it was, as opposed to where the Turks wanted it to go.
But let's cut to today, because for the past decade, the Kurds have been building that homeland of theirs in northern Iraq, not across the border in Turkey, but inland, which is not part of Turkey. Why can't that continue?
Well, it could. I mean, the reason that we're now discussing this is because the U.S. is proposing to do what it did not do in 1991, which is to overthrow Saddam Hussein and, in essence, shake up the Iraqi equation so that the not only the Kurds in the north, but also the Shia in the south are going to say, well, we want a bigger stake in this. And the Turks are making the point that because the U.S. wants to utilize their territory for the projection of forces into northern Iraq, they have reservations about this. And to go back to your original question, there are Kurds living inside Turkey who were involved in an uprising between 1984 and 1999. That's effectively been brought to an end, but the issues that led to the conflict, and it was a very bloody and a very costly conflict, are still there. So the Turks are worried that the emergence of a Kurdish state in northern Iraq, notwithstanding all the assurances that Kurdish leaders in Iraq give the Turks, will lead to problems. Rightly or wrongly, that's where the Turks are.
And Mr. Karim, tell me why it is, how it is, the Kurds could provide the sort of assurance to the Turks that an independent Kurdistan wouldn't be a training ground for PKK, for the Kurdish Workers' Party to once again start some kind of uprising in Turkey.
Well, first, Mr. Ali Rosa said that the armed conflict has essentially ended, although the reasons for it still remains. And it's for Turkey to tackle the issues inside Turkey as far as the Kurds are concerned and bring that to a peaceful conclusion. Most of the Kurds in Turkey, the majority, do not want to separate from Turkey, and they have indicated that. As far as Iraqi Kurdistan, the best example that you can cite...
Let me stop you if I can, because during that period of uprising, many of the Kurds who were fighting against the Turkish government took refuge in northern Iraq. They mounted their attacks from there. At some point, the Turkish army even said, this is too much, and they sent their own soldiers into northern Iraq to try and break up those camps. So, I mean, there's some reason for the Turks to worry about it, isn't it?
That's correct. But let's remember one thing. It was in 1984 that Iraq and Turkey signed an agreement that Turkish forces can fight Kurdish PKK inside Iraq, and they were pursuing them. So this was, let's not blame the Iraqi Kurdish authorities today for not being able to control that border. To the contrary, the Iraqi Kurdish forces have helped Turkey, in a sense, to the objection of many Kurds to prevent the PKK from operating. They have assisted them, they have joined them in operations, and the border between Turkey and Iraqi Kurdistan has been very safe. There has been very little cross-border attacks, and Turkey knows that. They still have forces there, but they were having these operations and these forces there even before 1991. Like I said, in 1984, they signed an agreement with the same government of Iraq that's in power now. And let me just get back to the issue of Turkey's concern about the Turkmens. I believe that's disingenuous. Turkmens have been under Iraqi government control for 80 years. No Turkish government ever has raised the issue of the Turkmens with any Iraqi government about giving them their rights. There are very small number of Turkmens now. They live in the liberated areas of Kurdistan.
Some 20,000, is that right? Is that an accurate number?
Exactly. Yes, that's about right. Most of them still live under Iraqi government control, and some of them have fled the country and became refugees.
Now, the Turkomans that we're referring to, I need you to explain. These are ethnic Turks, people who are considered closer to the Turks than any other group in northern Iraq?
They are close to the Turks, yes. They are Turkomans. The dialect, the way they speak is obviously different. But the Turkomans who have any rights in Iraq and are the ones who live in Kurdistan. They have full rights. They have political parties, they have television, they have newspapers, they have schools, they study in their language. None of this exists in the rest of Iraq, which Turkey has been having relationship with for 80 years, doing trade, doing commerce, and now all of a sudden using this against the only government that really gives the Turkomans their rights. I believe most of the Turkomans do not agree with the Turkish government's position. Actually, they live in Kurdistan, and they are cooperating with the regional government, and they're satisfied with what's going on there.
Let me turn, if I can, to Mr. Alireza, because if Turkey is so determined that there not be an independent Kurdistan in northern Iraq, isn't Turkey, in fact, creating a larger problem for itself by asking for a continuation of the type of frustration that the Kurds have expressed? People on a land with no nation to call their own, more inclined to cross the border and make life difficult for the Turks.
Well, you know, the reason I refer to the Ottoman Empire is that this is the one unresolved issue left from the Ottoman days. It was part of the British mandate, as I said. Now, 80 years on, the issue is being raised again. Where do you draw that line, and do you have an independent Kurdish state? Now, the Turks have not got to the point where they have said that they will accept a Kurdish state either in southeastern Turkey, where the ethnic Kurds live. And by the way, there have been some reforms that have been passed recently which makes the life of the ethnic Kurds who live in Turkey much easier than it was. It was an enlightened move by the Turks. It was belated, but they finally done it. So the Turks are making an effort on their side of the border. What they're worried about is if Iraq does indeed break up, and the U.S. has said that it will not allow the breakup of Iraq, and an independent Kurdish state emerges in northern Iraq, that will inevitably lead to problems on their side of the border. Now, whether that will involve armed groups being allowed to operate from northern Iraq to come into Turkey, which I doubt, or whether it will be an example that will lead to political activism turning into armed conflict, that's what drives the Turks. It's the uncertainty of what might follow that they prefer the present status quo. And let me remind your listeners again, the reason that we have an independent Kurdish state in northern Iraq is because the U.S. have allowed, the Turks have allowed U.S. and British planes to sustain that entity. Now, what we're discussing is whether that entity should evolve into an independent Kurdish state. And Turkey, which has played host to that operation and which now is being asked to play host to thousands of American forces to go into northern Iraq, is effectively saying no.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Dr. Karim, I will get back to you, but we have a number of callers who want to join us. We'll take some of those and continue the conversation with them. First to Imran, who's joining us from Ashland, Massachusetts. Imran, go ahead.
Hi. I guess what I want to say is I'm very alarmed by the U.S.'s stance on trying to basically negotiate a redrawing of lines. I think I look back in history and I see what a lot of the world hotspots today are really kind of the leftovers of European colonialism arbitrarily drawing lines across the region. And I look at us basically picking up where Britain and France left off. And we're doing it not for really concern of the Kurds or the Turks or anybody in particular, but really for our own kind of short-sighted means. It's the war on terror, the war on whatever.
But in point of fact, Imran, what's happening here is not a redrawing of lines. It's the United States saying that the territory now known as Iraq will remain as Iraq and the borders won't change. That's part of what leads us to the dilemma we're discussing today, isn't it?
Well, I think regardless of what the ostensible statement might be, I think the practical effect of going to war in Iraq is going to be a de facto redrawing of lines. And let's face it, a lot of people have been saying that the war in Iraq is going to have wider repercussions across the Middle East aside from just Iraq itself. And so it'll be, I just think there are so many big question marks out there and so many risks at stake that to sit and arbitrarily, come up with excuses to go to war and basically ruin people's lives in ways that we don't even know about
right. Is
short-sighted.
Nasmadin Karim, I wonder if what we're talking about, and I don't mean to be trite about this, is the word itself, Kurdistan, that if the Kurds didn't want to plant a flagpole, put up a flag, say this is Kurdistan, but say this is our land and leave off a determination of nationhood for the time being, would that make it any easier?
Well, the Kurds have a right for independence and having full self-determination like any other peoples in the world. Actually, we are the largest people in the world that has not enjoyed this right. But Kurdistan has been on the maps for centuries. You can see that. The world politics was different. Just like there was no Iraq, it was wilayats. The Kurdistan was the same thing during the Ottoman empires. But the main issue here is really not deciding independence or not. Because the Kurds have made it clear they want a federal Iraq. In the last Iraqi opposition meeting, the Kurds had the leading role in bringing the opposition together to reaffirm that, yes, we agree with the United States that Iraq should stay as one unit. It's Turkey that actually is breaking that rule. For years, they have been calling for keeping territorial integrity for Iraq, but they are the ones who have violated it, and now they want to invade it. And I think there has been statements by different Turkish leaders in the last 10 years as far as claiming the Mosul Wilayat, which includes Kirkuk and Mosul, which has the oil fields. And I like to see the Arab Iraqi opposition leaders to come out and make a clear statement as far as Turkey coming into Iraqi Kurdistan and invading it. This will destroy the U.S. plans for a post-peaceful, democratic, federal Iraq, and it will lead into continuous fighting, and the Kurds will not give up. The Kurds will resist any invasion.
But the Kurds are able to resist any invasion in large part because they live under that no-fly zone.
Well, the Kurds are, I'm not saying that the Kurds can match any invasion by any country.
Right.
Standing them militarily, but the Kurds will not sit and just watch while these people invade their countries. And we have been resisting successive Iraqi regimes for years, and we will continue to do that if our land is occupied. And there's no doubt about that, and no Kurdish leader or no Kurdish party can compromise on this issue.
All right, you're listening to The Connection from NPR. Next to Columbia, South Carolina, Rob's on the line. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Dick. Great show.
Thanks,
and lots of great topics. I'd like to back up a little bit of what that last caller said of this being us picking up the pieces of post-colonialism and us being the bad poster stepchild of that kind of era, if you will. It's my understanding that the backing of Iraq of Turkey militarily has been only second to Israel and Colombia. And Colombia has just recently replaced Turkey.
You're saying U.S. Backing of a state.
U.S. military backing,
right,
of Turkey, yes.
Yep.
Like us selling arms to Turkey has only really been second to Israel and Colombia until very recently. And Turkish have used these very arms that we've sold them, just as Saddam used his gas and chemical warfare that we sold them to basically ethnically cleanse the Kurds.
So if the United States has done...
What footing do we have on at all in saying whether or not there's a Kurdistan or not? That's not really our place to say, seeing as we've had a great hand in smiting them. So I'll take my comment.
I'll put that to Bulent Alireza.
Well, I'm not a spokesman for the Turkish government, and it's not my job to defend their action. But the reality is the Turks are not jumping into this equation themselves. The U.S. has been pressing Turkey to get into the pre-war discussions and pressing them to allow U.S. forces to go through Turkey. And what the Turks are saying is, if you want to project forced into northern Iraq, and that will lead to a war that I do not want, the consequences of which I fear, then I will put my own forces in there. So in essence, the idea of Turkish introduction of Turkish troops in the large numbers that we're talking about is a product of the U.S. request for force introduction. So, yeah, if you want to talk about where the initiative originates, why we're discussing what we're discussing, we have to come back to Washington. It's Washington's desire to overthrow Saddam Hussein. And by the way, we're ignoring the most important part of this equation, which is that as of now, until he's overthrown, what we have is a Ba'athist, Sunni-led Arab dictatorship in Baghdad that has done horrible things in Basra to the Shia and horrible things in the north to the Kurds. And hopefully that will be changed, but hopefully it will be done in a way that will not create additional problems of the kind that we're talking about.
So if you were to advise the President of the United States, given that the Americans feel that they have an obligation to the Kurds and an obligation to their partner Turkey, how do they find a middle ground?
Well, I think they're getting close to it. What they want is a compromise that allows the Turkish forces to go into northern Iraq, a certain portion thereof, in essence a buffer zone, which will satisfy the Turks.
10 miles in, 20 miles in? Are we talking about a DMZ of sorts?
In essence. While American forces go through Turkey into northern Iraq beyond what would be the Turkish buffer zone, and then operationally, I guess, they would hook up with the Peshmergas, who are willing, unlike the Turks, to assist the U.S. in overthrowing Saddam Hussein. Now, clearly that creates the desire to do both at the same time, creates tensions, and I guess that's what the U.S. diplomats like Zalmay Khalilzad are working on right now.
Let me just make a couple of points.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask you to come back with those points when we return from a break, because you've only just got a few seconds, and I do want to talk a little bit about how Kurds see the United States splitting its obligation to both Turkey and the Kurds, the Peshmerga, the warrior of the Kurds. It's a word that stands for those who face death. Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we're interested in hearing from you on how it is the United States can possibly find a middle road between satisfying the interests of both allies. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
Support for now.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. My name's Dick Gordon. One of my guests, Bulent Alireza, who is a director at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., a former Turkish Cypriot diplomat in Washington and at the United Nations, is suggesting that perhaps Turkish soldiers could set up some sort of DMZ between Turkey and northern Iraq, fight with the Americans and sort out what happens with northern Iraq after that. My other guest, Dr. Najmuddin Karim, who has been active in many Kurdish and Iraqi opposition groups, is actually one of the members of the steering committee for the Iraqi opposition and an outspoken advocate for Kurds living in northern Iraq. Dr. Karim, would that suggestion work?
I think it will not work. First, Mr. Erdogan, who is the practical prime minister of Turkey, has made it clear that Turkish troops will not be under anybody's commands, because it will be an insult to Turkish military. They have made that clear, so they will not be under any U.S. commands. Therefore, it's totally unacceptable to the Kurds for Turkey to come. If they like to establish a buffer zone, what is the buffer zone for? If it is for stemming refugees from going to Turkey, this is not 1991. The Kurds have prepared themselves. There is U.S. military involvement this time, hopefully, as opposed to abandonment last time in 1991. If they like to establish a zone, they can stay on their side of the border and have the buffer zone then. Why do they have to intervene in another country? And as far as Turkey is doing this only because the U.S. is asking them to bring troops there, actually that's not the case. Turkish leaders, this government, previous government, their military have made it clear that in the event of military operations, whether they allow U.S. troops, which they appear that they do now, to go through Turkey or not, Turkey will act to prevent to preserve its own interest, which means intervention in Iraqi Kurdistan.
But are you telling me that the Kurdish military leaders, upon seeing Turkish soldiers in northern Iraq, could in fact turn on them? There could in fact be a fight between Kurds and Turks before, during, or after a war for Baghdad?
Well, there will be definitely after that. During, it may be difficult to resist Turkish onslaught, but there will be, and U.S. will have a dilemma on its hand. If U.S. is really is genuine and truthful about Iraqi territorial integrity, why would it allow Turkish troops to come and invade Iraqi Kurdistan? What would that do to Iran? Will Iran sit idly by and just watch Turkey invade that area? We don't think so, and I think it will have international repercussions, and probably it will be more disastrous for the Turks. Does Turkey really want to involve and unite two parts of Kurdistan into one? In the short term, this may harm the Kurds, but in the long term, it may not be a bad thing. Some Kurds think so, actually.
Dick, can I add something to that?
Please.
Just to clarify, you said the Turks would fight with the Americans. The Turks have made it very clear that they would provide logistical support once there's an agreement, and the Turkish foreign minister is coming to Washington today for last-minute talks. But they would not actually fight with the U.S. Now, the U.S. clearly wants to utilize the Kurdish military factor in northern Iraq to help accelerate the fall of Saddam Hussein. But at the same time, in order to project the forces that would hook up with the Kurdish military in northern Iraq, they need to use Turkish territory. And that comes with a ticket. And the ticket is the Turkish desire to establish a buffer zone. Hopefully, we won't have the nightmare scenario that which touched on a few minutes ago. But the possibility of fighting between Kurds and Turks in northern Iraq. Hopefully this could be eradicated, but once you let some things out of the Pandora's box, like the Shia factor, which we're not discussing today in the south, or the Kurdish factor in the north, it may not be that easy to control.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Lexington, Massachusetts. Peter's joining us. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I simply wanted to suggest that perhaps the moral claim of the Kurds to a state of their own, or to a let's say an autonomous region within Iraq, if permitted by the Turks, might lessen rather than strengthen the moral claim of Kurds within Turkey, so that those Kurds who wish to be integrated into Turkish life can be; those who wish to live in a Kurdish state could move across the border to a Kurdistan. It's not at all clear to me that the Turks should not be persuaded to see how a some kind of Kurdish entity, maybe not what the Treaty of Sevres envisaged, would in fact make their task less rather than more difficult. And it might also be added that perhaps both Turks and Kurds have a stake in possibly making sure that the Kurds are reimbursed by the Arab regime for all of the Kurdish oil over many 50 years or so has been of Mosul and Kirkuk that has been taken by the southern Arabs. And at some other time, in fact, it might be in the interest of the United States to see that Kurdistan is enlarged, not at the expense of Turkey, the Kemalist ally, but of Iran and Syria.
Okay, let's not get it all into one.
No, all points to consider.
I understand, and I know that everything is connected, but for the purposes of trying to maintain an understanding of what's directly ahead right now, Peter has rephrased a question, Bulent, that I asked earlier in the program. Why a Kurdish land in northern Iraq wouldn't in fact be a good thing for Turkey in terms of taking away from Kurds in Turkey any desire to turn on the Turkish government.
You know, the Kurds of Turkey have been integrated in Turkish life, not as well as they should have been, and certainly the recent reforms, as I said, are belated. But the issue of the Kurds within Turkey is something that Turkey is beginning to tackle, and tackle in a way that hopefully will eradicate some of the problems that led to the conflict. But to actually link that to northern Iraq in the way that Peter suggested is going to be difficult. But if I may, he raised an issue that I was trying to avoid, which is he talked about the Treaty of Sèvres. I don't know if your listeners are aware of it. That's the treaty that was imposed on the Ottoman Empire at the end of the First World War. It was torn up by the Turkish nationalists under Atatürk, who forced the Allies to sign the Treaty of Lausanne. And then the issue, as I said, of northern Iraq was left out of the equation. Now, he talks about the oil revenues. Turkey was supposed to get a portion of the oil revenues from the British Mandate and then the Iraqis, and they never got that money. So it's not that they did not have certain rights with respect to Mosul and Kirkuk. And by the way, the Turkmens who live there, their issue has been raised by the Turks many, many times, particularly in the 50s. And I did my doctoral research in the Turkish archives during that period. They were raising it with the Arab governments in Baghdad all the way back to the 50s.
Let me just add, as far as a Kurdish state or a federal entity within Iraq, in no way poses risk to Turkey. Look at Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan became independent. There is a much larger Azerbaijan in Iran, and yet Iran never expressed the same feeling or the same animosity and hatred that Turkey is expressing towards any Kurdish entity. I think the problem with Turkey, it has not come to grips with the Kurdish reality. If the Kurds of Iraq gain whatever they can get, is going to be a plus for Turkey, because the Kurds of Turkey have made it clear that they want to live in Turkey. They want their rights. Turkey is not even ready to issue an amnesty for the remnants of the fighters in the mountains, remnants of the PKK, mm-hmm. because it wants to use that as an excuse to continue the oppression and denial of the rights and interference, actually, in Iraqi Kurdistan affairs.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Dr. Karim, I wonder if, in coming to terms with the current reality, whether or not you think the United States has come to terms with the current reality. I asked Mr. Alireza earlier in the program whether or not he saw a way of where the Americans can maintain whatever obligations they have to the Kurds, whatever obligations they have to the Turks, and avoid the sort of war that we're talking about. What's your recipe for or solution?
Well, I believe that what the Americans can do and should do is to be very clear about their intentions and what they want both sides to stand. I think the Americans have to make it clear and give reassurances, which I believe they have to Turkey, that yes, Iraq will stay as one unit and will not be split apart.
But the Americans are talking today about a military governor in place for a year, something that all members of the Iraqi opposition are reported to be dead set against.
Well, they will be dead set against it. These are the things. Americans have to make sure that they commit to democracy after Saddam Hussein, that they commit to federalism and pluralism within Iraq, that they have been telling the Kurdish leaders for the past 2-3 years or that they are for this. They have made comments, yes, how could we be against federalism when we are a federal state ourselves? And now to come and to take the Kurdish federal region or the Kurdish parliament away and take the Kurdish authority away is a betrayal of their own promises. I think they can play a role. They can prevent Turkey. Press Turkey, yes, you cannot invade. If you invade, the whole thing will break apart. It will be totally unsuccessful and devastating to American and Turkish interests to do that. And also to make it clear to them that, yes, we will protect you. We will not let flow of refugees. There will be American troops there. The Kurdish administrations have been, for the past year, preparing for how to take care of refugees, not only Kurdish refugees, but also refugees from the south and center of Iraq who might be fleeing Saddam Hussein, and to provide them with shelters and medical care and all that while the situation gets settled down.
Mr. Alireza, I'm hearing a description of what could well be another version of another no-fly zone, that if these issues we're talking about on this program aren't resolved, and it doesn't really sound like anybody's going in that direction, that it may be the only way to prevent a widening conflict would be to have Americans and British forces continue to hold a presence in northern Iraq, only in this case, rather than not separating Saddam Hussein from the northern part of his country, but to separate the Turks from the Kurds. Is that something you imagine as well?
Well, if realpolitik dictates the post-Saddam solution in northern Iraq, you're more or less right. I think that's what we're going to end up with. And it may end up pleasing nobody. The Kurds in northern Iraq may be unhappy. Certainly the Turks may be unhappy with some of the eventualities of that situation. But, you know, back in 1991, realpolitik intruded in a really horrific way into the equation and essentially allowed the slaughter of the Shia and the Kurds. Hopefully the administration is cognizant of the dangers of relying on realpolitik too much. But at the same time, you have to take realities into account. When you're projecting forces, you have to do deals with the governments that allow them to go through. That involves the Turkish government. And the Turkish government's made it clear that there are certain things they will not accept. So the U.S. Is between a rock and a hard place, and hopefully they will be able to get some sort of compromise before the war begins with some of these issues unresolved.
Dr. Karim, what do you think? Do you think the American soldiers will have to stay in northern Iraq even after Saddam Hussein is no longer in power?
I believe that some presence of U.S. troops, not in just Kurdistan but also in all of Iraq, probably will be necessary for a period of time. We know that there has been a lot of difficulties. What Saddam has created over the past several decades is a situation that has created a lot of animosity. And I'm really not so much worried about the Kurdistan region as far as chaos and interfighting. I'm worried about the southern part of and center part of Iraq, where the authorities will be completely lost. And in Kurdistan, you have an authority. There are forces. There is security. So that will be maintained. And we remember in 1991, when the Kurds liberated Kirkuk, nothing of that sort happened. So we are very sure that this will not happen in Kurdistan. However, in the south, it will be necessary to have some sort of military presence.
All right. I have to interrupt you because we're out of time. Gentlemen, it's a very complicated story. I thank you for your help in this hour and ask you to rejoin us again at some point in a future program to take the next step. Dr. Najmuddin Karim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Karim's president of the Washington Kurdish Institute and a member of the steering committee for the Iraqi opposition. Bulent Alireza, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Alireza is director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, focusing specifically on U.S.-Turkey relations. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
Support for National Public